This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today and Utopia Media Technology News Networks. We're about to speak with Bert Williams, who is the VP of Marketing at Tropos, Tropos Networks in Sunnyvale, California. Welcome to Utopia Media.
Thank you, Mark.
The reason we're talking today is because you're a supplier for a company called Verge, which has gotten a contract with the City of Los Angeles to build a Wi-Fi network in Pershing Square. What can you tell me about Tropos Networks' involvement in that project?
So Tropos Networks makes equipment to bring Wi-Fi out of the coffee shop and cover entire areas of communities, you know, as large as citywide networks.
Does it use a better, upgraded, newer kind of technology to do that?
Well, we use standard Wi-Fi,
right.
But we have a couple of improvements on that. First of all, we use better radios than your typical access point, so we transmit at the legal FCC limits, but then we also have more sensitive receivers that help us hear signals from clients farther away.
And that's very important because it's sort of easier to broadcast out than it is to receive.
That's exactly right. The weak link in these systems is always the client sending back to the base station.
And you've made a base station that's more sensitive to the clients.
That's exactly right. So we're able to hear the weak client signals far better than your typical access point can.
Okay. Now, do you work on A or G, or what kind of 802.11
We're using the 2.4 band and 802.11b.
Okay.
And then the other important improvement we've made is the use of what's called mesh networking technology. You know, your typical access point in some place like a Starbucks always has a wired connection to it as well.
Right.
But when you're talking about covering an entire area like a park or even, you know, larger a city, it really becomes logistically and economically infeasible to run a wire to every one of the Wi-Fi base stations.
Right.
And what we do is use a mesh networking technology, which is really a wireless routing technology that allows us to have only something like one of every five or one out of every 10 of our units wired, and then the others are totally wireless, both collecting signals from the clients, but then also repeating signals from base station to base station back to one of the nodes that has a wired connection out to the internet.
Can that base connection do a wireless backhaul as well?
Well, yes, that's exactly what we're using is the wireless backhaul.
Oh, okay. Is this what's called the Tropos Predictive Wireless Routing Protocol?
That is correct. Tropos Predictive Wireless Routing Protocol, or PWRP, is really our mesh networking protocol, and it has two unique characteristics. One is that it is the only mesh protocol that optimizes for maximum end-to-end throughput in the network, and then the other thing is that it has the characteristic that as you add more nodes, the amount of protocol overhead in the network stays flat at 5% of network traffic, so you never have to worry about having the control overhead for the routing protocol crowd out user traffic.
So that makes it very scalable.
Exactly, extremely scalable, and that is the that's one of the key things when we're talking about really covering large areas where you're going to need to have a lot of nodes to provide the coverage. Is if you're going to do that, you have to have it in a very scalable fashion. Your typical routing protocols, as you went up to a metro scale size, would begin to have the network traffic dominated by control traffic, and obviously the real traffic you want on the network is the user traffic.
So what that means in practical terms is that you can build, you can install this kind of network in one place and then add on around it relatively easily.
That is exactly right.
Okay. Let's talk about your relationship with Verge and who they are and what they've been doing and what other things you've been doing with them before Pershing Square.
So Verge Wireless is a wireless internet service provider out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Right.
And we have previously done projects with Verge in both Baton Rouge and in New Orleans.
What kind of stuff have you done there?
So the downtown Baton Rouge area has a Wi-Fi coverage area that Verge Wireless put up using our equipment. They have offered free basic internet access into that network. It's at least partially subsidized by the local chamber of commerce there, and then they sell value-added services such as secure internet connections, mail, and things like that in the area as well.
Now, are they finding, I don't know whether you're up that in that level of the operation, but are they finding that that's a economically, a financially viable approach to essentially give it away and then sell the value-added services?
Well, yes, and again, they're not, Verge as the service provider is not fully giving it away because they're being underwritten by the local Chamber of Commerce
right.
to do that. And the Chamber of Commerce obviously was interested in making the downtown area more attractive both for business people and for visitors as well.
Okay, are they finding, or have you seen statistics to show that people are flocking to the big hot spot to use the access?
So I can't give you any hard numbers, but in my conversations with the folks at Verge, it seems like the Baton Rouge hot spot, or I really should say the Baton Rouge hot zone, because
right.
it's more than a hot spot,
right.
It has been very popular, and in fact it was popular enough that they've gone and done something similar in the warehouse district in New Orleans.
Okay, and what kind of bandwidth are we talking about here?
Well, you know, our system can deliver over a megabit per second symmetrical connections to a client. So it's really, you know, faster than DSL, faster than some user experience you'll get on cable modems, but also has the important characteristic that you can upload every bit as fast as you can download. You know, it used to be we would think about the downloads being the high bandwidth thing and not much bandwidth going up, but now that we're seeing, you know, both large email attachments, people wanting to upload, you know, pictures, digital pictures from their phone cameras, or you know, people doing other sorts of file sharing, upload has become a lot more critical, and having symmetrical bandwidth so you can both upload and download quickly has become more important.
Okay, now an application I'm interested in, and I think could be enabled by this, would be people with digital video cams.
Absolutely.
In one place or another, you know, they want to show people what they're doing. Apparently in New Orleans, you're providing the hardware to build the system that's providing a network of surveillance cameras for the local police department.
That's correct, and in fact, that's another project we did with Verge. In addition to their coverage area in the warehouse district, that's more for you know, consumer and commercial access. Verge Wireless is part of a team that is helping to build a digital video surveillance network in New Orleans, and the wireless component is really being used for two things. One is to take traffic from video cameras that are located in areas where they can't easily get a wired connection,
right.
and bring that signal back to the what's called the DVR, the digital video recorder.
Right.
And then the other thing is so that the signals can get from the digital video recorder out to officers on the beat, so that the beat officers are able to monitor what's going on the camera.
So presumably, if there's some kind of SWAT action going on, the officers will be able to look at their laptops and see views from all around the scene if there are cameras there.
Right. So if there is some sort of an incident in an area where the cameras are located, then they'll be able to both see that back at headquarters and be able to have that video available out in the field as well.
And in fact, these cameras don't have to be, you know, like large Panavision cameras. They can be almost pinhole cameras, can't they?
Well, there's any really number of different kinds of cameras that you can use for a project like this. Now, if you're going to have a camera that's going to be up permanently, as many of the ones in New Orleans are, you really need to have a nice pan-tilt zoom camera that can give you
right.
Good high-quality images, and then you're also going to want to make sure that they're housed in something that is, you know, pretty much indestructible, because once criminals understand that there's surveillance cameras in the area, they will try to shoot them out or hit them with paintballs or do things like that to undermine their effectiveness.
And in fact, just in general, these units are very ruggedized to start with.
Well, so certainly the housings for the video cameras are, and then our units are as well. You know, our units would typically mount on something like a light post on, you know, for a street light, and you know, we can run over very wide temperature ranges. We can run in the presence of water, rainstorms, have lightning arrestors, surge suppressors, and all those kind of things, and make them, again, very rugged.
And if they're on light posts, that answers my next question of where they get their power. Presumably they get wired in from the lamppost wiring?
Yes. So, typically on a street light, if you take a look at a street light, the actual lamp housing and look on top of it, you'll see something that looks like a hockey puck up there. That's a photocell that serves as an on-off switch for the street lamp. So what we can do is actually unplug that, plug in our unit, then plug the photocell back in on top of our plug. So the photocell will still act as an on-off switch for the street light, but because it's hot 24/7, we can also draw electrical power off of that.
Okay, and with a cloud generated by your mesh system, the two-way communication can work so the people back at headquarters could both monitor the input through the video camera and tell it to pan, tilt, or zoom.
That's correct. So that it offers you the capability of bringing video from the camera in the field back to the digital video recorder to be able to manipulate the camera so you can zoom in closer, pan around, tilt up or down, and then, as I said, also be able to get the video from the DVR out to the officers who are actually out on the beat. And, we recently got a quote from Chris Drake, who's the project manager, the project director for the Mayor's Office of Technology in New Orleans for this video surveillance project. And in the neighborhoods where these cameras are used, according to Chris, over the last 6 months, murder rate was down 57% and auto thefts were down 30%. So, it appears like this is effective.
And people who might be otherwise inclined to commit those crimes, are signs posted this area under surveillance, or sometimes,
I don't know,
not
that
sometimes,
any signs,
yes,
are posted warning that, but I think that they've
gotten
around
the
picture.
Yes. Well, they got the picture.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. It seems like not only could police use this in SWAT-type actions, but movie directors could use it to see what's happening around the set.
Well, we have had people talk about any number of applications. For example, we've had people talk to us about deploying these in and around large pit mines, where you've got, trucks that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars and have tires that are taller than a human being on them, that they really want to keep track of those assets and be able to communicate between the people who are operating the trucks and other parts of the operation. And what they really like is the fact that this is easy to set up and use, and that because the essentially the size of the mine is constantly changing as they do more digging, it also can be taken down and redeployed easily as the mine's perimeter changes. So there's a lot of a lot of applications having to do with monitoring that go anywhere from video to automated meter reading to Wi-Fi enabled parking meters.
It sounds like it would make sense in urban warfare as well.
Quite possibly. We haven't really done any kind of a deployment like that to date, but people certainly have talked about things like cameras mounted on robots that would be able to use a mesh network to send signals back to troops who were located a safe distance away.
Okay, and so essentially the same mesh network works both for the internet connectivity and for the video surveillance, which is essentially really just a specialized use of the internet connectivity.
That's right. I mean, to us, it's all IP traffic.
Right.
And we see these networks being used both for very specialized deployments. So, for example, the surveillance network in New Orleans is being used strictly for video surveillance. We have other.
So, if you wander into that area with your laptop, it's not going to work for you.
Right. because, you know, the networks that are used solely for public safety organizations are really very tightly secured, so they will require VPN access to get onto the network. They won't broadcast their SSID so that customers won't, or consumers, for example, wouldn't even know that that network is available. And they take all sorts of security measures to lock these down.
Presumably there's more encryption going on as well.
Well, right. So we have the standard encryption that comes with Wi-Fi, but then all of these agencies are also using VPNs and things like that to give further security to the network.
Okay. How does all this apply to voice over IP and the possibility of using these mesh networks to provide that?
Well, you know, we see interest in voice over IP today, and the networks can support voice over IP calls today with, you know, some limitations in terms of the number of consecutive or concurrent calls,
right,
and things like that. And this is an area, though, that we see that just generally the industry and Tropos specifically is going to be putting in work to improve our quality of service capabilities. And as the quality of service capabilities improve, so will the both the quality and quantity of voice over IP calls on the network.
And in fact,
today, for example, we use our own wireless networking equipment in our offices, and we regularly use Skype to make calls.
What's
over
that?
Network,
what's that?
And it works just fine.
What's that? Skype?
Yeah, Skype. Skype is it's not exactly VoIP, but it's another basically audio technology for transport of audio information across an IP connection.
It's an acronym for something, right?
No, actually, I think it's the name of the company, SKYPE.
Oh, okay. And it's essentially similar in its functionality to voice over IP, but works in a different way?
Yeah, it works in a different way, but it's very similar in functionality. You can actually make Skype calls between PCs or from a PC to a telephone between PCs. They're free. From a PC to a telephone, I think it's like 2 cents a minute, and it's you know we run those regularly over the Tropos network that's in our offices today.
And in fact, from what you just said about functionality, you don't need to have a laptop to do voice over IP or presumably this other protocol, so that phones, cell phone like devices, can be used that are specialized solely for voice over IP or Skype using your mesh network.
No, absolutely. We're seeing handsets come out that are Wi-Fi enabled for voice over IP. We've talked to at least one handset manufacturer of Wi-Fi handsets who also said they will have Skype support before the end of the year.
Before the end of this year.
I'm sorry?
Before the end of this year.
That's what they're saying, before the end of this year. So,
right.
You know, like within the next 2 months or so.
In time to put the one under the tree.
One under the Christmas tree, that's right.
Okay, now, in fact, then, with sort of the this is a lot of convergence going on here, because cell phones now can take pictures and short video clips and send them over the cellular network, but the network that you've created has a lot more bandwidth, which would essentially mean people can put little miners' lamps type cameras over their heads if they don't mind being gawked at or if they want to be gawked at, and transmit live video from wherever they're going into the network, can't they?
Possibly, yes.
Okay.
And I mean, the other thing we're seeing is a lot of the cellular handset manufacturers are now announcing hybrid 3G Wi-Fi handsets so that eventually we're going to see the capability from people to make Wi-Fi calls or even, you know, upload their pictures off of their cameras and their handsets over Wi-Fi when they're within range of a Wi-Fi network, and then use the cellular network when they're not.
Okay. Well, with all of this as background, tell us what you've arranged with the City of Los Angeles to do in Pershing Square.
So the city is unwiring the Pershing Square area. They've awarded the the contract for that to Verge Wireless as a service provider.
Do you know when they did when they let the contract or made that arrangement? Weeks, months ago.
Yes, I can give you the exact date if you bear with me.
Okay, and if you've got the data there about how much Verge is getting out of this.
I'm sorry?
How much this is costing the city also, if you've got that on the same press release or data sheet.
The contract was originally announced on October 6th.
Okay.
And the contract, they don't give an exact amount, but they say that the yearly contract total is less than $25,000.
Really, to Verge?
Yes.
Okay. And is it installed yet? Is it going to be installed? What's happening with that?
We are in the process of doing the installation, and it is supposed to be operational in January.
In January, okay. Maybe I'll go down there. I'm only about 20 miles away from Pershing Square. Take some digital pictures and put them up on our site to talk
okay.
to give people a little more coverage. And when it's in place, how large an area is it going to cover for the hot zone?
So I'm not quite sure of the exact dimensions. Based on the number of units that I know are going to be deployed, I'm assuming that the coverage will be about between half a square mile and a square mile.
Okay.
This is one of those questions that you can't really answer until we have it fully deployed and are able to see how much the how far the signal travels outside of the area where the units actually are.
Okay. Now, remind us all about Wi-Fi and its relation to obstacles and buildings and trees and whatnot. Does it care about that, or is it line of sight only, or what?
So it does care about it, although one of the nice things about 802.11b and 802.11g, both of which run in the 2.4 gigahertz band, is that they care less than 802.11a that runs up in the 5 gigahertz band.
Okay.
And as a result, we'll get better outdoor propagation than you would with an 802.11a network. But if you have a lot of trees, for example, in an area, typically we would mount our nodes a little bit closer together,
right?
So that we could make sure that we heard the client signal, because as we discussed before, the real challenge in these networks is making sure that the weaker client signals can be heard back at the base station.
Okay, now I'm fairly familiar with that area. The Biltmore Hotel is across the street, right?
I believe you are correct, but to be honest with you, I've never actually been there.
Okay. Well,
I'm going to be in L.A. over the weekend, so I'm going to find out.
Okay, yes. Well, I think it is. It's across the street. Does that mean that the staff and guests at the Biltmore Hotel will be able to access this network?
Well, based on what I've seen in past installations, my guess would be if somebody was near a window on the side of the hotel that faced the park,
right,
that they probably would be able to. But if you get far back in the building,
right,
then you begin to lose signal. And again, the challenge is not so much the laptop user hearing us, but the signal from the laptop being able to get back out to the base stations in the park.
Okay, and that would apply, however high up in the building they were, as long as they were facing the park, facing the square.
I would guess up to about 60 feet or so.
Oh, okay, but not on the higher floors. In other words, is the signal spherical?
No.
Or more directional than that?
We talk about omnidirectional antennas.
Right.
The truth of the matter is omnidirectional antennas aren't really a spherical pattern so much as they're almost like a pancake-style pattern.
Right, they go out, they radiate out in essentially two dimensions.
Yeah, they're very good at radiating out in two dimensions, but they cut off up and down. And frankly, that's usually what you want anyway, because, for example, if they didn't cut off going down, you would have an antenna pattern that theoretically went way underground where nobody was,
or up in the air,
right above the light post where nobody probably is.
Right.
So we suggest mounting our base stations about 30 feet off of the ground,
right?
And because that makes sure that at ground level, you still have real good coverage from our antenna patterns. And the antenna patterns are pretty much symmetrical. That is, they're going to go as far above our units as they go below our units.
Okay. Do you know, and are you involved in this part of the process at all, about who's going to charge anybody how much for the access to this service?
My understanding is that that the connections will be offered free at least for a certain number of hours per day.
Okay, and is the city going to be doing a lot of surveying to see how it works? And
well, yeah, the city is obviously very interested in this, not just because they want to offer the service in Pershing Square, but because this is sort of a demonstration of one way the city might be able to provide broadband service to lower-income areas of Los Angeles. And if you remember, a few weeks ago, the mayor of Los Angeles announced the formation of a committee to study bringing broadband to all of Los Angeles' citizens in some way or another.
And talking about the technology of it, how would that work? Just to vast swaths of the city that are not really getting a lot of access now.
So, you know, you'd just build it out. You know, as you said before, one of the nice things about this technology is you can start in a small area and build out from it, and that's exactly what we'd envision people doing, you know, looking to mount on things like streetlights. Generally, our units are mounted something like a quarter of a mile to a third of a mile apart, so we're talking about 10 or 15 per square mile.
Right.
And then usually in-home access is handled by putting a small receiver in the window of the residence,
right,
and then having that in a street-facing window so it can connect out to the Wi-Fi mesh, and then either having that repeat the Wi-Fi signal inside the building or offering a wired Ethernet connection inside the building, so it looks like just like a DSL connection,
or some kind of wireless base within the within each residence.
Or you could have the Ethernet pigtail attached to a standard access point.
Now, this would work both in many of the sprawling residential areas of Los Angeles. How about in densely packed downtown areas with tall buildings? Is this an appropriate technology there?
So we believe that it is, but we have yet to actually implement in an area like that. So that's sort of on the next phase learnings stage for the company.
Okay. Now in these sprawling residential areas, what do you estimate the cost would be per square mile to unwire the area?
You know, the per square mile costs go between $30,000 and $50,000.
Right.
Which really on a per home pass or per potential subscriber pass basis is extremely competitive with other technology options such as you know, cable or DSL.
Do you think it's competitive enough that these systems could be put in areas that are already served by DSL and cable modems and successfully compete on price and bandwidth and level of service?
Well, we have at least one proof point of that already with Chaska, Minnesota.
What?
The city of Chaska owns an ISP, Chaska.net.
Right. How do you spell Chaska?
Chaska, C-H-A-S-K-A.
Okay, and it's in Minnesota?
And it's in Minnesota. Yeah, it's sort of in the suburban Twin Cities area.
Right. And what do they do there?
And they have installed a network throughout their entire community. Chaska.net is offering broadband service to their customers at a cost of $16 per month.
$16 a month.
They've done this exactly the way I described it a minute ago.
Right.
Where they when a subscriber signs up, they ship them a small piece of customer premises equipment with
right.
instructions to mount this in a street-facing window,
right.
and then it has an Ethernet connection. Out of it, so it hooks up to the resident's computer just like a DSL modem or a cable modem would. And typically we're seeing 1 megabit per second data transfer rates both uplink and downlink.
And from what we've been talking about, you could also run the voice over IP and provide telephone service.
You, if you chose to do that, you could certainly do that.
And you can distribute video over it and replace the need for satellites or cable systems.
Well, that I wouldn't go that far, because while you can put surveillance video across the network.
Right.
That's really quite different than actually providing television quality video that you know you'd want to watch in your house.
Satellites and cable still deliver the downloaded signal of better.
Yeah, because I mean, there's a couple of things there. One is, remember, with satellite and cable, you are delivering a ton of different channels across there at the same time.
Right.
And so you're not looking really at the bandwidth of a single video stream.
Right.
You're looking at the you know bandwidth of a 100 video streams at the same time.
Right. But for specialized uses, or let's say my Utopia Media network that wants to put video out to people and have three or four and have clips that people can watch.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the kind of video you download over the internet, for example.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay. Where does WiMAX fit into this scheme?
So. We actually view WiMAX as being a very complementary technology.
Right.
And the first place where we see WiMAX being used is you can view our networks as really having sort of three levels of linkages. The first level of linkage is between the clients and the mesh network.
Right.
The second level of linkage is from node to node within the mesh network. And then the third level of linkage is from the mesh network back to a point of presence where you have your connection out to the internet.
Right.
And there's three main ways that people make that connection from the mesh to the point of presence to get back to the internet. One is using fiber, you know, because obviously many cities have fiber installed.
Right.
A second one is a leased telephony service like a T1 or an E1.
Right.
And then the third is a point-to-multipoint backhaul connection, like, say, for example, a Motorola canopy connection.
Right.
Well, the place WiMAX would fit in would be as a standard alternative to proprietary point-to-multipoint solutions.
Right.
And we believe that the WiMAX, because it will be an industry standard, will offer better price performance than the proprietary alternatives to point-to-multipoint.
So the WiMAX would essentially be used for the backhaul from the whole configuration back to the internet.
Exactly.
And Wi-Fi would be used within the hot
exactly.
zone itself. Okay.
And we have a full three-phase strategy for migration to WiMAX, where the mesh to POT backhaul is the first phase, use within the mesh is the second phase, and then maybe five or more years off WiMAX out to clients as well. But as I say, that's very far off.
Okay. One last business point, or maybe several business points, is Tropos privately held or a publicly
yes,
traded
privately
company?
Held.
And what about Verge? What about Verge, do you know?
I believe Verge is privately held as well, but you probably should check that with them.
Okay. Now, I interviewed the CEO of Aramesh today.
Yes,
and they're doing what you're doing in Pershing Square. They're doing at the Marvin Browdy Constituent Service Center in Van Nuys.
That's right.
Do you cooperate, compete? Have you been talking to each other? Are you going to race to see who can fill the city with your access points faster, or what's happening with that?
Well, that would really be a race of Verge against Aramesh, because both Verge and Aramesh are our customers.
Ah, so you're selling to both of them.
That's right. I mean, our business is as an equipment supplier.
Right.
And then we work with service providers like Verge and Aramesh to implement the network.
So,
but they're really the guys who own the equipment. After we sell it to them, they're the guys who own the equipment and run the networks and collect the money for operating the network.
So you're in a win-win situation, whatever happens between them.
That's what we hope.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for filling us in on all this information. And,
you're very welcome.
As the build-out there takes place at Pershing Square, maybe we can talk some more and get some video from it, maybe have a regular program that has camera work taking place in the park at the square there and broadcasting it out to people through your networks.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for talking to us.
You're very welcome.
Okay. Bye.
Hey, and Mark, you know, the other guy you might want to talk to.
Oh, no, we're going to hang up. Let me turn off the recording.
Okay,
first.
Yeah.
Here we go.